Hello and welcome to Pandora's Box. This is Kalia. Today is February 11th, 2016, and the topic of our podcast today is love bombing and spiritual narcissism. Love bombing is a term that originated with the Moonies to describe a step in their process of conversion. In this process, a prospect is showered with love, attention, affection, admiration, and flattery, which makes the cult a very attractive place to be. One might easily come to believe he or she is truly embraced and seen as special. And of course, most of us wish to be embraced and seen as special. This is truly an effective part of the seduction of cult members. However, love bombing is not a technique used to seduce new members into a cult alone, but is also used by narcissistic people to seduce new sources of supply. A source of supply is a term used to describe those who are seduced into a narcissist world for various purposes, mostly attention, admiration, adoration, sex, money, or the fulfillment of any type of need. Love bombing is used by con artists, sociopaths, narcissists, and others who exploit the good and loving nature of other human beings for selfish purposes. The one being targeted is not truly loved or cared about, but is used consciously or unconsciously to fulfill the needs of the person or persons doing the love bombing. Love bombing is used often to secure a new relationship when a narcissistic individual will wine and dine a prospective love interest, shower her with attention and gifts, and genuinely show interest in the prospect. He will text her 20 times a day and pursue her as if his life depended on it. He will often want to see her every day, not giving her the opportunity to process the relationship, and he will do this in the name of, "I just can't get enough of you, you're so incredible." Narcissists are both male and female, and both use love bombing to secure new sources of supply. Narcissists will often rush into a new relationship, be quick to push moving in together and even marriage. The quicker he can get her under his control before his true nature reveals itself, the better. Although most people put their best foot forward in new relationships, most people have a genuine interest in the person they are courting. A narcissistic individual may seem to be interested and might even believe he or she is interested, but in the back of his or her mind is always an agenda. A narcissistic man, for instance, may love bomb a beautiful woman because he believes her beauty will attract more attention to himself. He believes he will be judged more positively and may even make his ex-girlfriend jealous. But he doesn't authentically care about this woman. He cares about how she will make him look or how good the sex might be or how it will make him feel to have a beautiful woman showing him attention and admiration. If the target is a successful man or woman, the love bomber may be looking for someone who can adequately take care of his or her financial needs, or at the very least provide a roof over his or her head. Love bombing is not really about love at all. It's a seduction technique. Love comes with genuine caring for another human being, and the needs of the other are important. A narcissistic person will pretend to care about the needs of the other, but on the same hand will completely ignore any expressed need in favor of his own agenda. For example, a woman might say, "Hey, I need a little space. You're texting me too much. Can we take a break?" The narcissist might say, "Oh, sure." And maybe he'll back off for a couple days, but then continue the love bombing as always. When she brings this to his attention, he will dismiss her needs and say something like, "Oh, I know we discussed my not texting so much, but I just can't help myself. You're so amazing, and I just want to feel close to you." Of course, the flattery is so seductive that most people see the love bombing behavior of the narcissist as harmless and even sweet. The attention is often welcomed and even enjoyed. Do love bombers know what they're doing? On the most part, it's unconscious. The love bomber has learned how to get attention of perhaps a parent or peers in early childhood by being exceptionally sweet and loving. And so he or she learns that if he or she is sweet and loving, they'll get what they want. They don't necessarily see their behavior as manipulative or having ill intent. The love bomber may actually believe he or she loves or cares about the one being love bombed. But there is a subconscious intent, and when that need is not met, the usefulness of the behavior is lost, and so it is ended or only used intermittently to get a need met. In the case of cult behavior, entire groups love bomb an individual with the intent of seducing that individual into the cult, but it is also largely unconscious. A member is seduced into the cult himself and comes to believe that the group is a loving entity and may desire to be part of bringing others in. Unpleasant behavior or consequences in the cult are overlooked in favor of focusing on the vision, the goal, or the loving vibe. We find the love bombing behavior frequently in the world of spirituality. The world of spiritual growth attracts many wounded people and also many spiritual narcissists. The wounded people are seeking healing, and the narcissists are bringing their spiritually seductive energies into target-rich environments. This is most common in the New Age-type environments where love and light is the basic teaching. The focus on negative or dark emotions is redirected to holding the space of love, light, and superficial forgiveness, and so there's a spiritual bypass of one's true emotional reality. Therefore, many of the love and light people are actually spiritually inauthentic. They hide their true emotional reality in order to appear happy and loving. Since the New Age is somewhat of a catch-all for many different alternative belief systems, you will find everything from polyamory, which is multiple sexual partners, to guru worship. There is nothing more satisfying for a narcissist than inflating himself to guru status, where he can attract the attention and admiration of many who are quick to sit at his feet and hang on his every word. What he teaches may not be as important as how he delivers his message, with charisma, charm, intense gazes, and affectionate touches. Followers may melt into the charismatic spiritual power and even be the willing recipient of his or her sexual healing energies. As someone who specializes in the field of narcissistic abuse, I listen to stories of these types of dynamics all the time. I have a personal involvement in the metaphysical spiritual world and have seen so much spiritual narcissism firsthand. Living in Sedona, Arizona, the metaphysical mecca of the country, guru aspirants show up by the droves looking to build a following. Fortunately, I am not and never have been a follower, and I'm not easily seduced into such situations. However, I have had my share of personal experiences with narcissistic spiritual love bombers who come in the name of love and light and leave as quick as they come, once their true nature has been revealed. The truth that is revealed is, they really don't care about me, my needs, or what's in my best interest. What they really care about is what I can do for them, or at the very least, that I feed their spiritual ego with my attention and admiration. Many spiritual leaders are driven by the need to be seen as spiritually superior, all-knowing, messengers of God. There's also a need to be financially supported by their mission, and so the more followers, the more people who believe they are special, the more financially abundant they are. It is common that spiritual leaders also have inappropriate sexual boundaries and have sex or strong sexual energy exchanges with many of their followers. Of course, we see these dynamics not only in New Age type teachings, but also in Christianity and other spiritual belief systems. This dynamic also shows itself in personal growth and empowerment leadership. So many people are looking for the answers to life's important questions. So when someone shows up on the scene promising the answers, to some of life's most difficult questions, that person can be easily perceived as the all-knowing one. However, if you studied various religions, metaphysical beliefs, and personal growth teachings, you will find that each teaching varies quite a bit. How is one to know what is really true? I believe the most effective spiritual leadership to be the kind of leadership that teaches people not to follow the leader, but rather to tune inward and learn to listen to one's own inner knowing. The true guru lives within each one of us, and the greatest spiritual teachings put us in touch with our inner guru. Where false teachings lead us away from ourselves, true teachings lead us to ourselves. False teachings often depict the inner guru as the enemy that we can't trust. For example, in some spiritual teachings, one often comes to believe that the devil speaks to us from within, so we can't trust our inner voice. But deeper spiritual teachings might guide one to listen to the still small voice within. Conflicting spiritual teachings can cause seekers a lot of confusion. So when a charismatic spiritual leader comes along with so much confidence and certainty that his or her teaching is the truth, we may momentarily find relief from our spiritual confusion. Of course, not all spiritual leadership is narcissistic, but narcissism is prevalent in spiritual leadership. I did a radio show many years ago on the Sedona Sweat Lodge tragedy led by personal and spiritual growth guru James Ray, who ended up serving prison time after several people died under his leadership. The reason people were getting sick and dying in the Sweat Lodge is that James Ray told participants that they had to look within themselves to find the strength to tolerate the intolerable environment of the poorly constructed Sweat Lodge. Participants came to believe they were weak if they couldn't tolerate the extreme heat and lack of oxygen. Since they didn't want to be perceived as weak by their fearless leader or other members of the group, they stayed in the lodge when their inner guidance was screaming at them to get out. One woman actually passed out in the lodge, and another spoke up and expressed her concern for this woman, feeling perhaps they should get her out of the lodge and tend to her. James Ray minimized the issue and, from what I understand, encouraged members to focus on their own journey and not be concerned with this woman. Subsequently, this woman died in the lodge. After the lodge, it was like a war zone with bodies strewn about, sick, vomiting, passing out, and dying. James Ray was said to have gotten in his golf cart and drove off, leaving the wreckage behind. What kind of leader would do this? We see several other spiritual tragedies, such as Jim Jones, who facilitated mass suicide by getting his followers to drink poison. And we see members of the Heaven's Gate cult committing mass suicide, believing their souls would be transported to a spaceship trailing the Hale-Bopp comet. Although there are many cases of spiritual leadership leading followers to their death, the majority of situations, although destructive, don't have fatal consequences. Instead, there are extreme spiritual consequences as followers give their power to one who leads them astray. I've counseled many women who gave their power to a charismatic and narcissistic man who took a leadership position in the relationship. What I refer to in my book, Healing Narcissistic Abuse, as a cult of two. In a cult of two, there is a leader and a follower. The follower gives her power to the one she perceives to be more intelligent, more powerful, and more knowledgeable than herself. The leader establishes himself as an authority in her life and targets her weaknesses and vulnerabilities as a way of controlling her. He finds her Achilles heel and uses that weakness to keep her destabilized. I found myself in this situation before, and it all happened quite unconsciously. It wasn't a lover in my life, but a man who established himself as a spiritual authority and took a great interest in me. He seemed to be happy and happily married. He was very loving and caring. When he first told me that he could see that I never really felt loved by the men in my life, I broke down crying because he hit such a deep truth for me. He was right. Deep down, I really did feel this way. He had exposed a weakness in me. He had exposed a deep truth and established himself as the one in the know. He also established himself as an authority or someone who could help me to heal this wound and learn to trust that men could love me, beginning with him. Although this was not an overtly sexual relationship, there was a lot of sexual energy directed at me, and although I was uncomfortable with it, I somehow felt my discomfort was part of my own dysfunction. I looked up to this man and trusted in his wisdom. But after a time of love bombing, coupled with targeting my weaknesses, I started to feel suspicious. At first, I interpreted my suspicion as another weakness, but something happened that caused me to lose respect for this man, and he fell off his pedestal. Fortunately, I was not so blind I couldn't see the deeper truth when it slapped me in the face. Once he fell from the pedestal I put him on, the relationship slowly declined until it ended altogether. I didn't simply say, "Get out." Instead, I started taking my power back and setting strong boundaries. When one sets boundaries with a narcissistic person, he simply goes away and finds someone else to shower him with adoration and admiration, someone who will see him as a spiritual authority and hang on his every word. I was no longer that person. Fortunately, there was little damage done, and I gained even more experience in recognizing yet another face of narcissism. We often don't recognize the narcissist because he comes so well-dressed, so to speak. He presents himself well. He or she is well-versed in love-bombing and make people feel special. We don't suspect there is more going on underneath the surface, and often we simply can't tell until we go deeper in. Many of my clients ask me, "How can I spot a narcissist? How can I prevent myself from getting involved with another one?" Well, there are signs we can look for, but we often miss those signs. I feel the best advice I can give is pay attention to how you feel in all your relationships. Don't blindly trust someone because he or she is loving towards you or showers you with positive attention. Be very careful about getting sexually involved with someone before you have developed a history. Don't automatically assume that when something doesn't feel right, it is your weakness or insecurity. Never feel guilty about enforcing strong boundaries. Narcissists are known for pushing the boundaries or completely ignoring them altogether. When it comes to small group dynamics, which includes one-on-one, two-on-one, or three-on-one, look for signs that the person or group is consuming more and more of your personal time and attention, perhaps asking for money, asking for a handout, giving constant advice, consistently pointing out a flaw or weakness, establishes oneself as an authority in your life, finds fault with other people or leaders you admire, refusing to be accountable or take responsibility for issues, or being told that the problems surfacing in your relationship dynamic are due to a weakness in you, or that you are projecting. That's a common one. The person in the leadership role is prone to anger outbursts or withdrawal when he or she doesn't get his way, or when you stand up for yourself. Relationships with others are looked upon as healer-healee relationships, where the narcissistic one establishes himself as the healer and casts the other in the light of the one who needs his or her support to be healed. There are no true equal relationships, as nobody in his sphere had the level of knowledge and awareness he perceives himself as having. You begin to feel as if you are a project or a mission, rather than a true or equal friend. Spiritual narcissists will often share personal information about you with others, information you shared in complete confidence. This is done in order to establish themselves as the healer or authority in your life. For example, if you share that you have had trouble finding a good relationship and are working on whatever it is going on with you so that you can step into a higher level of relationship, the spiritual narcissist may tell others, "She has real trust issues with men, but we're working on her, or with her, on this." The spiritual narcissist will establish himself or herself as the hero and sacrifice you, your reputation, and your confidentiality in order to appear the spiritual healer to others. The spiritual narcissist is quick to sacrifice others in the name of keeping up his own reputation. If he gets involved in a romantic or sexual relationship with someone that doesn't work out, mainly due to his own narcissism, he will not waste any time letting other members of the community know that the woman he was involved with has a lot of problems and is not ready for a relationship yet. He may say she has intimacy issues, sexual issues, trust issues, or is deeply insecure. Ironically, these issues do often emerge in narcissistic relationships because the narcissist avoids true intimacy and is not trustworthy. He or she may be sexually inappropriate with others, creating insecurity in his or her primary relationship. He may ask her to do things sexually she's not comfortable with, causing her to withdraw. He may share intimate details of their love life with others, causing her to lack trust in him. But he will put it all on her and take no responsibility. The spiritual narcissist will take very little responsibility because he or she actually sets up the relationship where he or she is the teacher or authority and the other is the student, the one who has a lot to learn. Initially, the person entering a relationship with the narcissist may believe his or her love interest is more advanced spiritually and allows them to take the lead. But at some point, there is an extreme lack of equality in the relationship, and the inferior one becomes the scapegoat for all the issues in the relationship. This frequently happens with people who are established as psychics or healers. Since a psychic has access to otherworldly information, this can be used as a form of domination and control. The psychic may say, "My guides are telling me that you've got this issue." It can be easy for one to give up his or her power to another who seems to have direct access to the divine. One's own guidance is considered less an authority than the master that the psychic is channeling. What we have to realize is that there is no authority above our own inner knowing. We may not be in touch with that knowing, but our role is really to go inside ourselves, find the still, small voice within, and learn to listen and trust its guidance. We should never give another individual or group, including a church, authority over us. In biblical scripture, Jesus says, "I am the light, the truth, and the way. Only through me do you get to the kingdom of heaven." And I believe he was not speaking about himself as a person when he says, "I am," or "me." But the words "I am" can be translated to mean the God within. There's a lot lost in translation. When we can learn to trust and follow the God within, we will find the way for our own lives. The God within is our internal guidance system, and anyone who represents themselves to have spiritual authority over us is a false prophet. Let no man be above God. The true spiritual leader puts you in touch with the God within and teaches you to trust this powerful aspect. He doesn't say, "Follow me," but rather, "Follow thee," as it speaks to you from within you. Although others may have insight into you and the issues you are struggling with, it's always dangerous to give even those with insight power over you. In my work, I've counseled many who have experiences with cult abuse, spiritual abuse from a minister, a spiritual leader, and psychological abuse from a therapist. Ironically, therapy abuse is quite common, as anyone who can withstand a few years of traditional education can come out with a degree in psychology and put up a shingle. Demonstrating psychological and emotional health is not a requirement to become a therapist. You only need to demonstrate the ability to fit into a traditional educational box and pass the right test. Therapists who have never faced their own darkness and done their own inner work may easily project their fears and hidden issues upon their clients. They may even find people to control, giving the therapist a sense of power. Even as one enters therapy, he or she must be able to determine what feels right and what doesn't. The most effective therapists, just like the most effective spiritual leaders, are the ones who put you in touch with your own inner wisdom and helps you to trust yourself so that you can make empowered decisions on your own. An ineffective therapist will establish a relationship of power, control, and dependency, keeping you dependent upon therapy. Similarly, a church will often establish itself as a spiritual authority in your life and instill the belief that if you don't go to church on Sunday and tithe a percentage of your income, you are sinning or falling out of favor with God. Regular Sunday attendance is required to be a good Christian, for example. Granted, church attendance is needed in order to support a church. A church can't be supported without members. So if you find a church or spiritual center to be fulfilling and conducive to your spiritual growth, you may choose to attend and support that institution financially. However, it's important to ask yourself why you are choosing this. Is it because you feel good, nurtured, supported, encouraged, and inspired? Or is it because you feel guilty? Narcissism is an epidemic in the world today. It shows up everywhere, in all forms, and it disguises itself beautifully. This is the deeper nature of narcissism. If it were easily detected, it wouldn't be the problem that it is. You find pathological narcissism, which is the more destructive disorder type, in politics, church, corporation, self-help, psychology, in the medical professions, in the entertainment industry, and in the family. Because narcissistic abuse is so prevalent in every area of our society, it's difficult to avoid. This is why it's so important to learn about it. Something can only remain in darkness when disguised. Once brought out into the light of awareness, it loses power. And so the more you devote yourself to being aware, the more you can recognize pathological narcissism before it takes root too deeply in your life. Awareness is the true spirituality. The more aware we become as individuals, the more we see that which only has power when hidden. It is not only what we see in ourselves, but what we see in others. We all have a dark side, which is made up of the parts of ourselves we're not aware of. But the more we become aware of our own dark side, the more we can see the dark side of others. What we call awakening is actually awareness. As we awaken, we become more aware. The truly enlightened being is the one who is the most aware. This also means to become aware of one's own emotional reality. When one sits on a lifetime of emotional repression, his or her level of awareness will suffer because that which is repressed is most often projected upon others. This is why I teach emotional awareness. What you feel, you can heal. That which you suppress is often mirrored back to you by others. You may be suppressing feelings of inferiority, lack of self-love, self-doubt, lack of trust, fear of intimacy, fear of abandonment, or a number of other things. Know that the greatest path of personal and spiritual growth is the path of self-awareness. Become aware of who you are and what lies hidden within your own psyche. The more aware you are, the less you will take on the projections of others, and the less you will be manipulated by those who use your lack of awareness to control you. When you are love-bombed, You may feel that something isn't quite right. Something doesn't feel authentic about the sudden flood of attention you are receiving. You take a step back. You evaluate. You pay attention to how you feel and how the behavior of the other changes when you step back. Stepping back from a person or situation is always good in order to check in with yourself. So never allow another to find fault with your need to take a break. Although you may not always spot the narcissist the moment he or she shows up in your life, with enough personal insight and awareness, you will begin to see the signs and step back before any true damage is done. You may not always spot the narcissist the moment you see him or her. The key is to step away or say no the moment you do notice that something doesn't feel right. If you have a history of bad relationships, don't be so quick to make your need to step back about some flaw in you. I always tell my clients, it doesn't matter whose fault it is or who's to blame. If something doesn't feel right, take a step back and regroup. The truth will reveal itself in time. You can even take full responsibility if you want to. You might say, I need some space to sit with myself and figure some things out. If someone has an issue with your need for time and space, it's clearly that person's issue, not yours. We all need time to ourselves to gain clarity and insight. If someone fears your clarity and insight will cause him to lose control in your life, then you are clearly doing the right thing. If someone else fears you will decide against being in the relationship and needs to dominate your free time in order to keep you hooked in, it is about that person, not you. Space and time away can be your greatest friend and the best way for you to separate yourself from the dominating energies so that you can find your own voice. When you truly find your own voice, it will never steer you wrong. Follow the voice of intuition, and you will always be guided to where you belong. Thank you for listening. You can get more information about my work with narcissism and abuse at narcissismfree.com. See you next time.